I'm Ashley Legasic.
And I'm Catherine DeClercq.
And we make up CTV's newest podcast, Life Unmasked.
We'll bring you everything you need to know about exactly how we're going to return to normal life post-pandemic.
New episodes come out every Thursday morning on iHeartRadio, and they're available on all streaming platforms later in the day.
We hope you'll tune in.
What's allowed and what isn't in the countdown to back to school. The framework for families to follow ahead of students returning to the classroom. The shift in guidance when it comes to symptoms.
And the path to a passport. The province's plan expected imminently. The discussions underway at this hour over proof of protection. Good evening. This is shaping up to be a pivotal week in understanding where Ontario goes next in the fight against COVID-19.
Life in this next phase of the pandemic after so many months of modifications. We begin our coverage with CTV's Natalie Johnson and the important information families will want to hear tonight. Natalie.
Well, Michelle, the province has once again made changes to its COVID-19 screening tool for students, and a runny nose is one of the symptoms that is no longer on the list. 15-year-old Kaylin Tuzon got her second COVID-19 vaccination today at this mobile clinic. Two doses down ahead of the start of school.
Feel more safer. A bit worried, but I'll trust how the school handles everything.
They are excited to see their friends, and actually they learn more in school than at home.
70% of 12 to 17-year-olds in Toronto are now doubly immunized. And with just days left to get a first or second shot ahead of the start of class, officials are stressing that every additional vaccination will help ward off outbreaks in schools.
We can't have a strong and robust reopening overall in the city of Toronto without schools that are open and safe.
The province, meanwhile, has updated the school screening guidelines for the virus. Runny or congested noses, sore throats, headaches, and extreme tiredness or muscle aches have been removed from the list of symptoms that bar students from attending class. The list of symptoms that indicate students must stay home is now limited to fever or chills, cough, shortness of breath, decrease or loss of taste of smell, nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea. But Toronto's top doctor still warned today.
To parents, if you have even the slightest suspicion that your child is unwell, we need you to keep that child at home and apart until it's clear what is giving rise to their symptoms.
Teacher Kristen Tinelli is excited to be heading back, ready for a safe September.
The kids have to get back in the classroom. We have to get a little bit of normalcy. We have to be safe, and we just have to keep moving forward.
Toronto Public Health says it will assess the COVID-19 numbers in schools daily, and any time a case is determined, the affected cohort will be dismissed immediately, and an investigation will be conducted. Toronto Public Health is also recommending that kindergarten students all wear masks indoors, something that is not currently recommended by all school boards. They're also recommending masking and physical distancing in music classes where the virus is more likely to be spread. Reporting live, I'm Natalie Johnson. Zoraida, over to you.
Thank you, Natalie. On the vaccination front across the province, nearly 83% of eligible people have now received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine. And more than 76% of eligible people are double-dosed. That represents more than 9.9 million people in Ontario. Meanwhile, we could find out as early as tomorrow just what Ontario's version of a vaccine passport will look like.
From dismissing the idea to deliberating it, the Ford government with a change of heart over certification. CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello is live with more. Colin.
Well, Zoraida, it was just about a month ago that Premier Doug Ford outright rejected the idea of vaccine passports, saying he didn't want to divide society over such a divisive issue. Now, as the province faces another punishing wave of COVID-19, the Premier and his government seem to have changed their minds.
At the Gingerman restaurant in Toronto, the province's COVID-19 rules are followed with precision.
We try and, you know, keep everything under control and in line with the restrictions and the rules.
What the restaurant cannot control is whether diners are fully vaccinated. The owner says a handful of people have refused to get the vaccine. Fellow diners can't understand it.
I would love to have some kind of a card or something that I could show people when I go around and then they know that I have been vaccinated.
CTV News has learned that the Ford government will unveil a vaccine passport this week for non-essential businesses. As the fourth wave continues to rise, the unvaccinated could see their access to restaurants, movie theaters, and gyms limited.
If we can ensure that everyone in an indoor venue like a restaurant, a movie theater, you know, you name it, is vaccinated, you are helping to create a safer indoor space.
This is a major reversal for Premier Ford and the Progressive Conservatives, who have for weeks outright rejected the idea of a vaccine passport.
We will not, as a province, be imposing a vaccine passport on Ontario residents.
The answer is no. We aren't going to do it. We aren't going to have a split society.
So what changed over the last few days? So the premier has been under intense pressure, both externally and internally within his own government, to accept vaccine certificates. Now, public opinion on the matter seems to be shifting as well.
I think it is a superb idea. The sooner the better. I can't wait for it to come.
I think if you can show proof that you've been vaccinated, then you should be able to live your life normally.
Now, opposition critics say the government should listen to experts and implement the type of certificate that's required.
I'm hoping that they make the right decision tomorrow, and I'm hoping that we have an urgent and effective vaccine certificate delivered for the families of Ontario very, very soon.
Whatever the format, restaurateurs are welcoming it.
We got to get this under control, this situation under control. It's only for the best for everyone.
Especially as businesses look to avoid a fourth wave lockdown. I've been told that the Ford government has been working through the weekend to try to finalize exactly what the vaccine passport will look like, but they haven't quite landed on the final plan just yet. Premier Doug Ford was scheduled to meet with his cabinet at 5 o'clock this evening to try to decide what that passport should look like. Here is what government sources are suggesting to me. They say it's not going to be a government-issued ID similar to a driver's license, what Manitoba has. Instead, they're looking to British Columbia and Quebec for their examples. They're having some kind of a QR code that you could download onto your phone to show to a business owner that you have indeed been fully vaccinated. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. Turning to the COVID-19 case count now, and Public Health Ontario is reporting 694 new cases in its most recent update. 527 of those cases are among people who are either not fully vaccinated or their vaccination status is unknown. More than 18,500 tests have been processed in the last 24 hours, and Ontario's positivity rate is sitting at 3.6%. That is the highest since early June.
540 more cases are now considered resolved, pushing that total to more than 540,000 over the course of the pandemic. No new deaths are linked to the virus today. 9,498 lives have been lost to COVID-19 in Ontario.
And here's a look at tonight's regional breakdown with 121 new cases in the city of Toronto and 104 in Peel Region. There are 98 new cases in York Region, 74 in Hamilton, 38 in Durham Region. Niagara logged 20 new cases with 16 in Halton.
Many Ontario businesses are hoping a vaccine passport could be the way to attract more customers and increase revenues.
But as CTV's John Woodward reports, some believe the move is essential to just surviving.
The Horseshoe Tavern has hosted legendary acts, though it's hard to keep that energy during the pandemic. Its patio is open, it has some tables inside, but revenue is just a tenth of what it was.
We're not really at full operation in any way whatsoever, so we're struggling.
Owner Jeff Cohen is hoping that a vaccine passport could let him attract more acts and customers safely.
It not only gives it confidence to the ticket buyer, but it makes the bands and the staff feel really good. So a lot of bands aren't playing right now because they won't unless there is a vaccine mandate.
A vaccine passport would require someone to prove they have been vaccinated to enter non-essential venues. One has been implemented in Quebec and will soon be a reality in Manitoba and BC, shaded green in this map. In yellow, provinces that have a standardized vaccination document but don't require it for entry. In red, provinces with no plan. Ontario is red, but sources say with an announcement this week, things could change. One source now indicating the Ontario solution may be closer to Alberta's than Quebec's.
No one is safe until all of us are safe. And with the variants, especially the Delta, we need everybody to be vaccinated and be able to prove it in order to get indoors as we go into the winter.
In the meantime, an app gold rush has begun. Dr. Elaine Chin is part of Innovation Health Group, pitching its Welcome app as a solution to track vaccine data securely.
Whoever has an all-in-one solution that goes beyond the immediate need to validate vaccines and their documentation will be the person that will come up on top.
Some businesses have decided not to wait for Ontario and are implementing their own vaccine passports. Others hanging back, hoping to avoid protests that have targeted more outspoken venues.
We'd like to see everyone do it at once. We're not willing to be the guinea pig that steps forward, but we do believe in it 100%.
Cohen worries about the alternative.
Staying in stage three to like February, you're just going to see indoor live music venues go bankrupt.
He's hoping there's a provincial solution to help his shows go on. John Woodward, CTV News.
Coming up, countdown to deadline day as troops complete their dangerous withdrawal from Afghanistan. Plus, last-minute rescue efforts helping desperate families escape the Taliban's control.
The scale of the devastation is only now coming into full view. Hurricane Ida, one of the strongest storms to ever hit the U.S.
Tonight, the rescue effort is underway. Ida swamping the Louisiana coast, ravaging the electrical grid in the stifling summer heat. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us in the studio with the latest. Raheem.
Well, Michelle and Zoraida, 5,000 members of the National Guard have been deployed. 50 shelters have been opened, and nearly 3.4 million meals are being sent to the devastated areas, with the death toll of one expected to rise. What was an interstate on-ramp looks more like a lake in rural Louisiana, flooding, leaving many roads impassable, stranding those who didn't get out in time.
Just hoping that they're safe and hoping we can get out there soon to them. You know, right now it's just a waiting game.
Those who are safe have few options for where to get food and supplies after Hurricane Ida tore through their southeastern state. The storm arrived with vengeance, reaching speeds of up to 230 kilometers per hour.
Oh my God! Yo!
Ripping the roof off this clinic, pulling down power lines and toppling trees, already responsible for the death of one man.
That tree was coming to my house and my neighbor saved me.
More than 1 million people are still without power across Louisiana and Mississippi, forcing hospitals to treat patients using backup generators.
If they're not going to have power up for another week or 10 days or more, you know, that could be a real big problem.
The U.S. president now trying to speed up the recovery.
To authorize the use of surveillance drones to assess Ida's damage to energy infrastructure while ensuring those flights do not disrupt aerial search and rescue operations.
A massive cleanup is also underway in New Orleans. Ida making landfall on the 16th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina.
With Katrina, we got about like 2 feet of water in here that just stayed for about a week or two. But this was just a lot of wind damage and no power.
Two very different storms, both leaving a path of destruction behind.
If there is a bright spot, it's that there was no major flooding inside the flood control system that protects New Orleans, which is good news after investing $14.5 billion into upgrades after Katrina. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Also tonight, the search for a stolen van following a terrifying start to the day. You'll hear from a witness who describes the chaotic moments after a violent carjacking in Mississauga. But first, Michelle Jobin is here with a look at the current conditions. And of note today, Michelle, no more heat warning. That was quite a stretch.
It certainly was. We were talking about this heat warning that was in place really for over the week. We had a brief reprieve on Friday as temperatures cooled down, but then they really got back up there again. Heat and humidity over the weekend. And of course, we had severe thunderstorms to contend with throughout the weekend. I'm not talking about those in the forecast tonight, so I'm very happy that we're not, because some of them were quite intense. So we got as high as 28 degrees today, feeling like 30 degrees, and that's where we're sitting at the Island Airport right now. At Pearson, 27, feeling like 30. Going down to 18 degrees tonight, which is still warm for this time of the year, but not as warm as we were overnight yesterday. It felt like 30 degrees already when you woke up this morning. Not talking about Humidex overnight. We've got winds out of the northwest that are really ushering in a bit of a fresher feel to our forecast. Lots of sunshine on the way for the next little while. Not much to talk about on satellite and radar. And we're looking at lower humidity, lots of sunshine, and seasonal temps through the week. Back to you.
Thank you, Michelle. The chaotic American withdrawal from Afghanistan has ended ahead of tomorrow's deadline. The last U.S. troops left today, leaving the country in the clutches of the Taliban.
But many Americans and Canadians remain stranded amid an ongoing threat of deadly attacks. CTV's Vanessa Lee reports.
At least five rockets were fired at the Kabul airport early this morning, according to American defense officials. It's believed they were launched from this car. The latest violence did not stop the steady stream of U.S. military cargo jets from taking off and landing at the airport the day before the deadline to withdraw.
We have thus far received confirmation that about 6,000 have been evacuated.
A plane carrying Afghan interpreters and their families landed in Ukraine this weekend. In a daring rescue, Ukrainian troops went into Kabul on foot to escort two minibuses with a total of 19 on board to the airport.
I like to stay in Canada because I work more with Canadians. 5 years in Canada with them and 5 years in Kabul with them. So I like Canada. It's a good year to settle there with my family.
Mohammed Sharif Sharaf is a 49-year-old father of five. For a decade, he was a fixer and translator for the Globe and Mail. Currently in Kiev, he is one of two translators soon en route to Canada. Jawed Hakmal is a 33-year-old father who worked with the Canadian Special Forces.
It was very, very difficult and very, very truthful because in the last 1 month or 2 months, we even didn't see any American or Canadian or other one to come out from the airport because it was so dangerous.
The delicate operation was coordinated by the Ukrainian military, the Office of President Volodymyr Zelensky, and the Globe.
They were not rescuing Ukrainian citizens or translators who'd work for them. They were doing this as a favor, really, to Canada, to Canadians.
When asked if Canadian troops should have taken on a more robust role to get people out, this was Justin Trudeau's answer.
Canada and Canadians can be proud of the contributions we made in getting out almost 4,000 people.
Canada and other countries are now left to trust the Taliban at its word that it will allow foreign nationals to leave. Vanessa Lee, CTV News, Montreal.
Meanwhile, for Afghans who now find themselves here in Canada, this marks the beginning of a new chapter.
And the mobilization of many and helping them find comfort in a country they now call home. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live with more. Beth.
Zoraida, I'm at one of the quarantine sites for refugees near the airport. There's a lot of privacy and safety concerns, so we're not showing you exactly where we are. Families are allowed to go for walks, and I was able to connect with one of them. They told me they arrived a week ago. When I asked about Canada, I got a thumbs up and the words, very good. Escaping Afghanistan, landing in Canada. Thousands are making the harrowing journey away from Taliban rule, arriving at Pearson International Airport before 2 weeks of quarantine.
We were told that there was a variety of people and lots of babies, lots of children. Told us the situation that they were people here that basically just had their clothes that they were wearing. They didn't have any luggage.
New Circles Community Services is one of several GTA organizations being mobilized into action. In days, they sorted and put together clothing and shoes for 300 people.
You know, they were saying they were so thrilled to see that we had brought shoes because the woman I was speaking with said that they actually had a few individuals who had arrived here in Canada without any shoes on their feet.
The nonprofit says there are up to 2,500 Afghans in the Toronto area, and it's exciting to help families starting a new life, the items being gratefully received.
And there were kids knocking on the window and waving down to me and calling hi. I mean, it was so cute, and it was heartbreaking.
Community partners are also coming together to provide meals. The City of Toronto is assisting the federal government, bringing together settlement agencies. It says other immediate needs are around housing, employment, and mental health services. One group assisting the effort told CTV News after quarantine, there are families who will travel to cities across Canada. All this while the refugees' relatives remain at risk back home, and many others try and get out of Afghanistan.
Well, we still don't know how much of the things that Taliban are saying will be true. As long as I know, none of it is true. And they're talking about safe passage right now, while just the past couple of days they haven't been letting people to pass.
For the lucky ones who made it to Canada, supports and resources are coming together to help them settle in their new home. Canada has evacuated 3,700 people. So far, families have settled here in Ontario, Alberta, and British Columbia. Reporting live, I'm Beth McDonnell. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. And a reminder, our online team is tracking every development with the situation in Afghanistan and the next steps for those now in Canada. You can find that coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca.
Yorkdale Mall is back open today after reports of shots fired sent the shopping center into lockdown on Sunday. The call came in after 3:30 yesterday afternoon, while with officers flooding the area to secure the scene. Toronto police say they recovered a loaded gun and ammunition. Fortunately, no one was seriously hurt. Shoppers were eventually escorted from the mall and reunited with loved ones. A 21-year-old man faces multiple weapons-related charges and three counts of assault.
There has been another arrest in connection with the death of a woman found in a suitcase. Officers discovered the body of 41-year-old Varsha Gajula of Caledon last Wednesday in the area of Keele and Hillary Avenue. Toronto police say there were obvious signs of trauma. Today, investigators announced the arrest of 37-year-old Carita Jackson. She'd been wanted for second-degree murder and is expected in court tomorrow. 35-year-old Andre Bartley and 57-year-old Christopher Daly had been previously charged with accessory after the fact and indignity to human remains.
Next to chaotic moments in Mississauga this morning, a violent carjacking with the victim run over with his own vehicle. In a moment, you will see security video of the aftermath. CTV's Mike Walker is live at the scene tonight near Dundas and Haines. Mike.
Well, Michelle, police say the victim was sitting in his van when the carjacking happened at this parking lot just before 7 this morning for some unknown reason. Investigators are still searching for the stolen van and three suspects.
A security camera captures police arriving on scene as employees from a Tim Hortons look on, minutes after a violent carjacking in Mississauga this morning.
I noticed a gentleman in distress, and the Tim Hortons staff were kind of running around and making phone calls.
This woman saw the victim on the ground when she pulled into the parking lot.
He was yelling, two white guys took my van, they took my van. A van that wasn't there when I first arrived was speeding away.
Peel police say a 38-year-old man was pulled from a white Nissan van that was parked behind the Tim Hortons in a plaza near Dundas Street and Hines Road shortly before 7 this morning.
He was inside his vehicle when his driver's side door was open and he was pulled out.
Police say no weapon was seen, but the suspects ran over the man in his own vehicle.
And at some point, as the vehicle's leaving, the vehicle went over the man, so he was actually run over.
Paramedics transported the victim to hospital with serious but non-life-threatening injuries. Evidence markers were seen scattered across the parking lot this morning as investigators with the Central Robbery Bureau search for evidence and canvass for witnesses. The motive behind the carjacking not yet known, leaving people who work and shop at this plaza feeling uneasy.
We're, of course, concerned and alarmed. I mean, typically it's a bit of a quieter area. We don't really get a lot of times see these type of things happening. But as a business owner, it's very concerning for sure.
That's very scary because we are here usually having coffees, having chit chat with friends, whatnot, quietly doing our own thing, going back to work, whatever, you know. So we don't anticipate something like that. And that's not something that gives you a comfortable feeling.
The stolen Nissan van was last seen heading eastbound on Dundas Street. It has an Ontario license plate BD83714. Investigators say they are looking for three suspects, two women and a man. But at this point, there are no descriptions.
So once again, that stolen van was last seen traveling eastbound on Dundas. Investigators are hoping someone may know its whereabouts or have captured it on their dash camera. Reporting live, I'm Mike Walker. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, Mike. A new week on the federal campaign trail has begun with more multi-million dollar promises.
There were pledges today to protect Canada's lakes and rivers, to safeguard animals and their owners, and to make billionaires pay more. CTV's Heather Butts has the details.
Free of the protesters and hecklers that followed him through Ontario last week, today Justin Trudeau opted for a quiet Quebec park to outline his plan to help restore the country's lakes and river systems.
We're making the choice to fund science because we're a government that believes in science.
A re-elected Liberal government would invest $1 billion over 10 years to protect large lakes and rivers, and $37.5 million over 6 years for freshwater research, plus create and fund a Canada Water Agency to coordinate federal freshwater efforts.
Do you like the announcement today, Wex?
At a dog sanctuary north of Toronto, Aaron O'Toole pledged to protect the welfare of animals and their owners.
A Conservative government will ban puppy mills, inhumane high-volume dog breeding facilities that churn out puppies for profit, ignoring the needs of the pups and their mothers.
O'Toole's policy looks to impose a national ban on cosmetic testing on animals, invest $10 million a year to train judges and prosecutors on the links between violence against animals and people, add animal cruelty as an aggravating factor in domestic violence prosecutions, and promote animal welfare as a part of a child's education. While promising to tighten animal cruelty laws, O'Toole also having to answer for a Nova Scotia candidate. Troy Myers withdrew today after an allegation of sexual misconduct surfaced online. In a statement, Myers said, "I have taken the difficult decision to back from politics and focus all my attention and efforts to fight these defamatory false statements."
We take any allegations of sexual misconduct or harassment very seriously. That's why this person is no longer a candidate for our party.
Meanwhile, the NDP leader is targeting tax loopholes that benefit billionaires.
We've been saying we believe that the ultra-rich should pay their fair share so we can invest in people.
Jagmeet Singh is committing to end offshore tax havens, increase public reporting on corporate taxes, and invest $100 million for staff and resources to strengthen enforcement by the Canada Revenue Agency. Jagmeet Singh has moved on to Vancouver Island, where he's hoping to steal one of two seats held by the Green Party. Justin Trudeau headed north to Nunavut, while Aaron O'Toole is focused on battleground Ontario. Heather Butts, CTV News, Toronto.
Enemy poll did not campaign today. The federal Green Party leader had personal meetings scheduled. And you can visit our website for continuing coverage of the campaign as we head toward Election Day on September 20th. Visit election.ctvnews.ca.
In California, more evacuations have been ordered as a two-week-old wildfire approaches Lake Tahoe. Fire officials have stressed for days that protecting the area was their top priority. Flames are ripping through mountains just a few kilometers southwest of the Tahoe Basin. The blaze is 19% contained after burning nearly 635 square kilometers, an area larger than Chicago. More than 600 structures have been destroyed and at least 18,000 more are under threat.
Europe's largest active volcano has exploded again. Sicily's Mount Etna spewed lava and thick smoke. It also dropped a thin layer of ash onto villages along the big mountain slopes. But there was no impact on the operations of the nearby Catania International Airport. You may have noticed Etna has been very active this year with 50 volcanic episodes. The last one was on August 10th. It is the largest of Italy's three active volcanoes, which also includes Stromboli and Mount Vesuvius.
High above all that lava, there was a special delivery at the International Space Station today. A SpaceX supply ship arrived at the orbiting outpost after a day in transit. It was carrying a couple tons of research gear and ice cream and other treats for NASA astronaut Megan MacArthur. She is celebrating her 50th birthday, so no doubt there will be an out-of-this-world party tonight with the birthday girl joined by her six crewmates.
Still ahead, celebrating everybody and encouraging others to do the same while tackling ableism at the same time.
Wanted to take a closer look at what is now Tropical Depression Ida as it continues to churn towards the northeast. It will take a bit of a turn to the right and pass just under New York. All coastal warnings and watches have been dropped at this time, but it is still capable of producing very heavy amounts of rainfall, even as far north as the Ohio Valley, 150 millimeters of rain, and for southern New England, about 100 millimeters of rain. So it is still a very potent system, especially when it comes to the amount of moisture that it's carrying. And of course, all the cleanup does happen right now in behind in its wake. I'm going to have more details coming up about your forecast very soon.
Okay, I'm a summer person. I do enjoy the summer weather, but I have to say I'm a bit relieved to know that we're going to be out of that extreme heat.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, I think. We are looking at definitely less heat and humidity coming up. I like the heat and humidity, but yesterday felt quite oppressive. And the other thing is it really helped to fuel that severe weather that we experienced as well. Weather is brought to you by Trane for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop a Trane. So, yes, cooler, less humidity, and less volatility to deal with in the forecast in the week ahead. Also, as we head into the overnight, we're already going to feel less humidity. So we reached a high of 28 degrees so far today, feeling like about 31 degrees. So really, that's a bit above seasonal for this time of the year. We should be hitting 24. But all in all, things were pretty nice. And in comparison to what we experienced yesterday, we saw that humidity really decrease during the day. As we look ahead to tonight's overnight lows, 18 degrees in the city of Toronto, not really, really tacking on too much in terms of a humidex value. So I haven't included them here. And that really goes throughout the region. Winds have shifted in behind the front that caused all those storms last night to being from the northwest. And that gives our air mass a much cooler, fresher feel. And I think that will continue to develop as we get through the week, as we look at temperatures that are really spot on seasonal by the time we reach Wednesday, Thursday. Tomorrow, we're looking at a high of 26 degrees, feeling like 29, 26 feeling like 30 in Peterborough, 26 feeling like 31 in Hamilton. So it's still warm. It's just not as warm as we have been. We're not dealing with a heat warning, so that's something definitely to keep in mind, because it's going to feel much more comfortable. UV indexes will be high at times, though. So here's a look at our satellite and radar imagery. There's not a lot to show you because there's not a lot happening right now. Mostly clear skies. We've had a mix of sun and cloud throughout the day. Not much happening in terms of rain. That front moving on to the east. We're dealing with some showers and storms associated with that in parts of Atlantic Quebec and in the Maritimes in the next little while. Weak surface trough, giving us a bit of cloud cover. Chance of seeing some showers as we look ahead to the forecast radar. So just pausing it as we see a few spotty showers pop up as we get into tomorrow. A little bit more cloud cover in the afternoon. So if you see a few sprinkles of rain here and there, it's not going to be a washout. Don't worry about that. And then as we get into Wednesday, we see this clearing even more, especially through the overnight. So our overnight lows are going to get a little bit lower as we get into the middle part of the week. Tuesday, 26. Tomorrow, feeling like 29, 16 degrees in the overnight. Wednesday, lots of sunshine. September 1st, the beginning of meteorological fall. 24, feeling like 13. So right where we should be at this time of the year during the day, a little cooler through the overnight as we get very clear skies. Thursday also at 23 degrees, mainly sunny on Friday at 23, so a little bit below seasonal. And then I see a little bit more heat, potentially a little bit more humidity building as we get into the weekend. There is a chance of seeing some showers on Sunday, but by no means a washout. 26 degrees and Labor Day looking pretty good. 23 degrees, feeling really close to that as well. Back to you, Zoraida.
Thank you, Michelle. Also tonight, the wait for Drake fans is finally almost over. The Toronto rapper making a big announcement about his upcoming project. We'll tell you when it will officially arrive. It's a campaign aimed at reducing discrimination and opening doors for the differently abled.
All in Blue Review launching its sixth annual Dear Everybody initiative. CTV's Pauline Chan reports.
I love basketball because it's a great way to express myself. Plus, I have a great workout, and it helps me a lot with my legs.
12-year-old Christopher Sebastian was born with cerebral palsy, and while most of the people he knows are happy to cheer him on, he has also been bullied in the past.
It was very terrible, especially being here, living here without any other family, and raising a child with a different ability. But I gained my strength seeing my son's strength only.
Ableism is the idea that there is a disadvantage or discrimination of people with disabilities while favoring or valuing more people without disabilities. Recently, we did a study of Canadians, and over 95% of Canadians could define or understand the meaning of terms like racism or sexism, but only a third knew what ableism meant. And so we clearly have a lot of work to do.
That's why Christopher is a spokesperson for Holland Bloor View's Dear Everybody campaign.
It's to show that certain people with disabilities can do much better or can do the same thing that you can, and there's no reason to judge them.
The aim of Dear Everybody this year is to spark conversations so those with different abilities can tell their stories, share their problems, and show they're not so different from everyone else.
Don't judge a book by its cover. Don't judge my skills before you've seen them, because sometimes they can be great.
And for Christopher, especially in basketball. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
China is banning children from playing online games for more than 3 hours a week. Starting on Wednesday, minors will only be allowed to play games from between 8 and 9 p.m. on Fridays, weekends, and on public holidays. The new regulation affects some of China's largest technology companies, including gaming giant Tencent.
After months of delays, Drake has announced the release date for his new album. The Toronto rapper uploading this image today. It is the official album art for Certified Lover Boy, which hits streaming services on Friday. It is Drake's first full-length album in 3 years. Certified Lover Boy has been veiled in secrecy since its anticipated release last January was postponed.
Meanwhile, we now also know when Jon Stewart's new show will debut. The problem with Jon Stewart begins September 30th on Apple TV+. The company says the former Daily Show host will take a deep dive on the most important topics driving the national conversation. There will also be a podcast. Stewart left Comedy Central in 2015.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
If you have even the slightest suspicion that your child is unwell, we need you to keep that child at home and apart until it's clear what is giving rise to their symptoms.
Updating our top stories, here is the list of symptoms that indicate students must stay home. The province has updated the school screening guidelines for the virus. Runny noses, sore throats, and headaches have been removed from the list.
If we can ensure that everyone in an indoor venue like a restaurant, a movie theater, you know, you name it, is vaccinated, you are helping to create a safer indoor space.
CTV News has learned the Ford government will unveil a vaccine passport this week for non-essential businesses. The province is switching gears amid growing pressure and public support for certifications.
I'm here to announce the completion of our withdrawal from Afghanistan and the end of the military mission to evacuate American citizens.
The last U.S. troops left Afghanistan today, ending a torturous withdrawal. It also marks the end of America's 20-year military involvement in the war-torn country. But many Americans remain stranded.
People across the province are waiting for word on Ontario's vaccine passport plans.
And that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're now joined by Stephanie Smythe. So, Steph, you'll be hearing from business owners about what they want to see.
That's right. You know, we've heard so much about this conversation, and now it's down to the people that are going to be very much affected by it. Restaurateurs, people who run fitness places where you go to work out. So what do they want to see in this vaccine passport? So we'll be exploring that a little bit deeper tonight.
And as we begin week three of the federal election campaign, you'll be taking a closer look at some of the protests that have happened over the past few days.
Right. We've been seeing that with the Liberal leader, Justin Trudeau. And we're going to talk about the impact these protests are having, if they're having at all, on the campaign. And also we'll talk about platforms. We haven't really seen a full platform from the Liberals yet. So we'll talk protests and platforms and much more coming up on CP24 tonight.
We look forward to it. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
In business, a new poll suggests Canadians think the housing market is calming down. Greg Bunnell of BNN Bloomberg has the details.
Hello. Many Canadians are questioning if home prices will continue to climb this year. The latest Bloomberg Nanos Consumer Confidence Index shows 51% of those polled expect home prices to increase over the next 6 months. While that's a significant amount, it's the lowest reading for that question since February. More than a third expect prices to stay the same, while 11% think that home prices are actually going to pull back. Housing affordability has become a key issue on the campaign trail, with the federal party leaders all making pledges to address the problem. It's another setback for the tourism sector. The European Union will reintroduce travel restrictions on the United States amid soaring COVID-19 cases in America. Now, those transatlantic routes are important revenue drivers for the major airlines, and names such as Delta and American Airlines came under pressure today. And the Americans, well, they're raising their travel advisory on Canada, recommending that U.S. citizens reconsider travel here because of COVID. High temperatures and drought are putting two Canadian crops under pressure. New numbers today from StatsCan suggest that canola growers will see their smallest harvest since 2012, and wheat output is forecast to plunge to a 14-year low. Record high crop prices in the spring had farmers planning for large harvests, but the intense heat of the summer is pressuring those yields. The news comes as Canadian consumers grapple with higher food costs. Well, the Canadian dollar was up 4 basis points to 79.32 US. American benchmark oil gained 47 cents a barrel to close at 69.21. Alberta's heavy crude Western Canadian Select was up 22 cents, settling at 56.59 US. And the TSX Composite Index lost 49 points, closing at 20,595, with financials and mining stocks leading the way lower. That's the latest from BNN Bloomberg. I'm Greg Bunnell.
In New York City, at least two Canadians are moving on to the second round at the U.S. Open. Montreal's Félix Auger-Aliassime advanced on day one of the tournament. The 12th seed in the men's draw beat Russia's Evgeny Donskoy during a four-hour marathon match. Laval's Leyla Fernandez is also moving on after defeating Croatia's Ana Konju. Rebecca Marino of Vancouver is facing fifth seed Elena Svitolina of Ukraine right now. Just ahead, persevering in the pool and making his mark at the Paralympics. Why the weight of the world doesn't seem to matter when this local teenager hits the water.
Tonight, we're taking stock of this monumental day in Afghanistan.
So the end of the nearly 20-year mission.
From the final American evacuation flights to the start of life under the Taliban. Later on CTV National News.
To the Paralympics now, one of our local swimmers who's been in and out of the pool in Tokyo is Matthew Kabaja.
The Brampton teen is blind and has improved his skills greatly over the years, finding the experience of racing in the water freeing.
In like regular daily life, I use either a cane or someone guiding me. So it takes a lot of perception and kind of focus to just get around in things. So it's kind of slightly restrictive. But the water is definitely the place where I have no restrictions at all. It's just my canvas to paint and to work with and really shape it into what I want it to be.
In the water, Matthew Kabaja is in his happy place, making his Paralympic Games debut in Tokyo. The 19-year-old says he's been on a long road to these games, grateful for the tough experiences along the way, learning the sport of paraswimming.
Those were really good learning experiences for me and honestly shaped me a lot more than even the successes did.
Kabaja was born blind in one eye and at age 9 lost his vision in the other eye. Competitors swim in blacked out goggles to ensure there's no advantage for those who have partial sight.
So for me as a blind swimmer, between the walls, I'm completely on my own to do everything as to my best of my ability. But when I come into the wall, someone stands on the deck with a long pole. It's about 8.5 feet long. And they tap either my head or my upper shoulders to notify me that the wall is close by, that I need to make a turn.
In 3 of his Paralympic events, he's placed in the top 10. His best showing so far was a 7th place finish in the 400-meter freestyle. Next, he'll tackle the 100-meter butterfly.
This is probably the race I'm most excited for. It's butterfly is my favorite stroke now. It used to be my most terrible stroke to swim, but then I worked on it for years and years.
Known for entertaining teammates with his musical skills in between competition, Kabaja says he's embracing the energy of the moment on the world stage, hoping he can show Canadians what para swimmers can do.
Nothing's stopping anyone. Anyone can really pursue what inspires them, what makes them kind of wake up in the morning and be driven.
And he competes in the 100-meter butterfly on Friday. And in other news from the pool, Canada got silver in the women's S7 100-meter backstroke today. Danielle Doris of Moncton is bringing home the hardware. Canada now has 12 Paralympic medals.
And speaking of pool, probably a nice evening to be in the pool tonight, Michelle.
An excellent idea. Now, we're going down to a low of 18 degrees later on, but we're still holding on to a fair bit of humidity today, and we're sitting in the upper 20s throughout the region at the moment, feeling close to the 30 mark. 26, feeling like 29 tomorrow, so a little bit cooler, very comfortable, still warm, lots of sunshine on the way for us, a little less humidity for Wednesday, 24, feeling like 13 for September 1st, technically the meteorological beginning of fall, 23 for the middle of the weekend, and then a little bit warmer as we get into the weekend. Slight chance of showers for Sunday, but all in all, a very nice week ahead. Michelle?
Sounds good. Thank you. And be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
And you can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 tonight begins momentarily on CP24.
For Michelle Jobin-Zarada and all of us here at CTV News, have a great night.
We'll see you at 11:30.